Dagestan is part of Russia. It's one of these multi-ethnic republics of Russia. And for a long time, Dagestan has been held up as the poster child of the one happiness integration and the living together of communities within Russia. So much so that first opportunity that Putin took to take some official photos after Prigozhin, the former leader of Wagner, had revolted, was in Dagestan to show like everyone still loves me, especially in these multi-ethnic provinces, because they're also happily integrated under the Russian umbrella. Dagestan, however, also has a majority Muslim population who already at the end of October 2023 showed that there is a very strong anti-Semitic trend among them, because there were over 100 people storming the airport in the capital of Dagestan that tried to hinder a flight from Israel, which wasn't actually scheduled to land till then. And now, over the weekend, we had attacks on a synagogue, on several Orthodox churches in, I think, two cities in Dagestan. There was a firefight with police officers. So far, no group has called responsibility, but everyone, of course, assumes it's an Islamist terror attack.
Why did this take place?
Look, Dagestan is north of Chechnya. Chechnya has had a very strong Islamist current that the current leader of Chechnya violently suppressed over the last couple of years, Kadyrov. There was already a spillover of violence from the Chechen wars into Dagestan. It's the next province up north. In 1999, where a group of 1,000 fighters spilled over. So there is, of course, from Afghanistan emanating outwards, a trend of supplying weapons, radicalizing people, recruiting people for Islamist terrorism. And I think this is what we see now reaching really step by step into Russia. And apart from the high profile attack in Moscow a couple of months ago, this is really the region where you would expect some trouble to happen.
A couple of people have suggested that Russia may be out of its depth right now, not being able to either detect these attacks or stop these attacks. The one in Crocus City, they had been warned about that, and I'm not sure why they weren't able to do anything. But there's this question about whether the war in Ukraine is creating some bandwidth issues for them. What are your thoughts?
I mean, there are two issues here, as far as I can see. Number one is, of course, a issue of resource. So a lot, of course, of the intelligence, but a lot of the actual human resources, policemen, military personnel, is at the front in Ukraine. This is not an easy military situation for Russia either. It's using all the available resources, even scrapping some security resources inside the country. The second problem I see is that really the propagandization of Russian society and politics has now inevitably also reached the security forces. So if the big man in Moscow says, our country is happy behind me and there is no problem, even if you see a major problem, how can you report that upwards? Because the big boss, who speaks only the truth, has just told the opposite of what you are finding. So once you are going down this road where propaganda becomes your reality, it becomes really dangerous when reality then clashes with your propaganda.
What do you see when you look at the tradecraft that was utilized in this operation?
Look, I mean, from the outside, it really looks like there have been at least some rudimentary military training. That's not that easy to get in a police state unless you're a former member of the police or the military, but it's very easy to get in Afghanistan. Right. And so since we have our brethren, the Taliban, back in charge, who are always happy to support international terrorism as long as they don't do it in their name, it's not inconceivable that these individuals have been recruited and trained by people operating in Afghanistan prior to this, because this is not something like a lone actor scenario where one individual gets hold of a gun. And this was an organized attack simultaneously in three different locations, multiple individuals involved, and then a firefight with the security forces. So this was not a lone actor doing something on his own, or three people having the same idea.
So as you look at what took place here, against the backdrop of what we talked about, I think just last week or so, about the fact that more organized, planned, and plotted out attacks are going to start happening. What do you make of what took place here against what we've talked about?
Look, I mean, having already worked on Afghanistan and terrorism in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and before 2001, I'm not surprised what we see. I'm also not surprised that the country who has been taking the Taliban off its domestic terror list, Russia, who has made lots of concessions to the Taliban in order to build that political relationship, is the first one to pay the price for this. You cannot trust these individuals. Afghanistan and the Taliban have proved in a horrendous way throughout the late 90s and then especially 9/11 that they cannot be trusted, that they are not partners, that they are maybe as a Taliban movement just concentrated on Afghanistan, but they're happy to harbor and protect other guys who are interested in international terrorism. And they're not even breaking the Doha Agreement if they allow attacks in Russia, because the Doha Agreement says we will only prevent Afghanistan from being used in attacks against the US and its allies. And I don't think anyone would call Russia at this point an ally. So the Taliban and the situation in Afghanistan, unfortunately, is exactly developing in the way that it was in the late 1990s. We have exactly the same discussions that we had in the late 1990s. I hope we don't pay the same price that we did in the early 2000s.
That's Dr. Hans-Jacob Schindler, Senior Director at the Counter-Extremism Project.